From the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
Senate Republicans will soon vote to override Donald Trump's border emergency order, which will probably require the first veto of the Donald Trump administration. We'll tell you about the political fallout from that. And Gerald Nadler, head of the House Judiciary Committee, starts up the impeachment machinery investigation of Donald Trump with a mass subpoena display in the House of Representatives. Where is that going to go? Welcome. I'm Paul Gigot, and I'm here today to talk about all this with my peerless colleague, William McGurn.
Hi,
how
Paul.
Are you, Bill? And equally peerless, Kim Strassel. Hello, Kim.
Hello, Paul.
So let's start with the Senate Republicans. Rand Paul, the Kentucky Republican, announcing that he will vote to override the president's border order, and that makes 51, joining Tom Tillis of North Carolina, Lisa Murkowski of Alaska, Susan Collins of Maine, and assuming every Democrat votes to override, as I think we can safely assume, that makes 51. And that means that it will join the House, which has overridden the president. The vote could come as early as next week before the members leave on a recess. And that means the president will have to veto, Kim. How do you see that? What's the fallout from this? Does this mean the president's support is eroding in even the Republican Senate?
Well, this was always the risk he ran by issuing this national emergency, because it was always clear that there were going to be some Republicans that had real issues with it, and basically on two different grounds. You have folks who are appropriators or deeply concerned about military budgets and who do not want to see the president raiding any funds there. You know, that's where Tom Tillis is, and you could have other folks like Senator Lamar Alexander from Tennessee, Roy Blunt. And then there are also the strict constitutionalists, and Mr. Paul falls into that category, but also guys like Ted Cruz, Mike Lee, Marco Rubio. So I think in terms of the fallout, the question is going to be, how big of a rebuke is it? How many Republicans end up jumping on this and saying no? It's unlikely that they get anywhere near the two-thirds that they would need to then override that veto. But again, it's just very damaging for the president, because it looks as though he is split from his party, and that he has very little support on this issue among either Republicans or Democrats.
Well, Bill, the human dynamics and political dynamics in the Senate are such that nobody wants to be the 51st vote. But once you get a 51st, then
people would be 53,
54. then you get the dam breaking somewhat.
Right.
And I think that is it's possible as many as 10 Republicans or so could break here against the president in the Senate. I mean, you have Ron Johnson of Wisconsin, for example, who expressed some doubts. He's in the category Kim mentioned of somebody who doesn't like this presidential right. assertion of the ability to move funds not expressly offered by Congress. And then you have some of those who are running for re-election. Tom Tillis is running in a tough race this year. Susan Collins is, but also Cory Gardner right. in Colorado, a swing state. Martha McSally, who is an appointed senator, going to be running. She lost in 2018 running herself, then was appointed to an open seat, now will run again in 2020. She's concerned about the military, like Kim said, and then she's in a tough race. Either way, I think the problem with this for the president, what he's done is he's made life difficult for these Republicans politically. He's divided his own conference. These senators feel, who are running for re-election, that if they vote against the president, they'll get a backlash from some Republicans. And if they vote for him on this, they're going to look a little too Trumpian for some of the swing voters.
Right. I think there are two large points about this. One that we've made, I think, in editorials on the substance itself. I'm not sure it's unconstitutional what he's doing, because he's exercising statutory authority. So the question is the interpretation of that, which is murky, and it could go his way. But just because something isn't unconstitutional, so it's not equivalent to Obama's executive orders. I think.
Agree with that. I think the Supreme Court may very well say the president has authority under the National Emergencies Act to do this, but that's separate from the politics.
Right. And also, even on that point on the substance, sense. Just because something's not unconstitutional doesn't mean it's a good idea. I mean, in general, the principle is Congress, you know, designates the money to spend on different things. When you go around, I mean, we should be for doing things in the normal way. I think we've also said, as you point out, it splits the, needlessly splits the Republican Party. The Democrats are in a great position here because they can at once revel in a victory that deprives – it's not going to deprive them of the thing, but have the party go against them. And they get the precedent of a national emergency, which maybe a Democratic president will use on climate or something else. So, I mean, I don't think you ever – unless you absolutely have to want to split your party this way – and that's a danger for him. And, you know, with this, with such a small majority in the Senate, that's his problem. Now, I think it's unlikely that there's enough votes to override the veto, but it still splits. It still creates this tension within his party when I think he needs a united Republican Party to push back on the Democrats on a whole host of issues.
Yeah. The 13 Republicans, if I recall correctly, in the House voted with the Democrats to override the president on this already. That's not enough to override a presidential veto, but it's still embarrassing to have the president have to veto what essentially will become a bipartisan rebuke of a presidential action.
Yeah, and that House vote, by the way, I was quite struck that it was only 13 House Republicans, but that was in part because leadership in the House did push very strongly and whip quite strongly to try to keep its members from defecting there, to set the precedent that there wasn't not going to be the numbers capable of doing an override of a veto. But yeah, it's embarrassing. And, you know, I think what you see a lot of Republicans saying too, and is they're frustrated over, is that this was needless in a way. You know, Lamar Alexander, the Republican from Tennessee in the Senate, continues to point out that, you know, he does agree that there are some funds that were already approved by Congress. For instance, the Defense Department accounts that support the interdiction of illegal drugs, there's money in that, that no one disagrees with, or certainly no Republican really disagrees that the president has the ability to use that money. And it's a substantial chunk of change. And so they're frustrated that he went the further step and declared the national emergency and put them all in this position, when in fact, you know, at the end of the shutdown, he could have said, okay, opening up the government, hope we'll get a deal down the road. For now, I am going to use a little bit more of this money here, which I clearly have authority over, to continue building my wall.
And just to be clear, he could have done that without declaring a national emergency.
Correct.
Reallocated
Correct.
Some of those funds. Okay. All right. Thank you, Kim. We'll see where this goes. We're talking about Donald Trump's political clout in the Senate and Jerry Nadler unveils the start of the impeachment drive. You're listening to Potomac Watch from the Wall Street Journal.
WSJ Special Access gives you a front row seat to some of the Wall Street Journal's most exciting content, like The Quirkier Side of Life, a new series that features the fun, surprising stories our reporters come across.
The chief executive walks 10,000 barefoot steps every day. He recalls stepping on a bee, which put him off earthing for a couple of days, but he got back to it.
Check out The Quirkier Side of Life on WSJ Special Access, only for WSJ subscribers.
From the opinion pages of The Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
Welcome back. I'm Paul Gigot with Kim Strassel and Bill McGurn. So let's shift to the Gerald Nadler, New York Democrat, runs the House Judiciary Committee, out of which articles of impeachment would flow if they ever do. And Nadler sending out a mass subpoena, number of subpoenas, I think 60 or is it 80? Maybe even 80. To a variety of people associated in the Trump orbit. And he seems to be aimed particularly, Bill, to try to build what he is calling an obstruction of justice case. And that's related to firing of James Comey as FBI director, comments the president made about, according to Comey, about the prosecution of Michael Flynn, his former national security advisor, and all and sundry things. It's a kitchen sink kind of subpoena. Right. I mean, I'm surprised you haven't got one, or I haven't got one.
Haven't checked the mail.
But I mean, everybody in Washington's getting one, and I think a couple of things stand out to me. One is that he's doing this on the eve. Even before we have seen, but presumably the eve of when we will get the Mueller report. So he's not even waiting for the Mueller report. And he is saying, well, whatever the Mueller report decides, we are going to pursue our own separate fact-finding and our own separate investigation, and he may not go as far as we do. So there is this sense that, well, they once said Mueller— what he finds will determine how whether we go and impeach. Now it doesn't matter what he finds. We're still going to move to investigate with potential impeachment at the end.
Yeah, I read that as Mr. Nadler's concession that Mueller is not going to find collusion, right? So we need to find another crime here, and we're going to do it. That said, I have a strange respect for him in the sense that, you know, I regard the special counsel is very corrupt as an institution, not personally, not that Mueller's personally corrupt, and inspector generals and all that, very dubious about this. The kinds of investigations the president should be in Congress and should be the Judiciary Committee. Now, I think he's overreaching, but at least if Nadler overreaches, his party will pay a price. There'll be a political calculation, which is what we're meant to be. That's far better to me than Andrew McCabe launching an investigation into the president or even a special counsel's investigation. At least it's in the right venue. The irony is the Democrats didn't support the Republicans when they were trying to get material out of a Republican administration, right? So it's going to be interesting to see. They would have been in a stronger position had they done that.
Kim, do you share Bill's reading of what Nadler's up to?
Absolutely. And I also share Bill's view that this is, in fact, the appropriate venue to do an investigation like this. Now, I think the problem, and this is going to be the Democrats' problem overall, is that Nadler already looks as though this is a fait accompli, that they're not really doing an investigation. In fact, he admitted as much. They're simply ginning up the PR necessary, jumping through the hoops necessary to look as though they've done the investigation. You know, he was on ABC on Sunday, and it was remarkable what he said. I'm actually going to read it because it's very clear. He said, it's very clear that the president obstructed justice. Okay, so that's Nadler already saying that he's made that conclusion, which he believes is an impeachable offense. But then he goes on to say, well, we have to do all this investigations because we don't have all the evidence completely sorted out. And quote, before you impeach somebody, you have to persuade the American public that it ought to happen. Mm-hmm. You have to persuade enough of the opposition party voters, Trump voters, that you're not just trying to steal the last to reverse the results of the last election. So that's Nadler saying, we already know we're going to impeach. But really, we're just going through the motions here to try to make it look as though this is legitimate.
Well, and he is going to be, his committee, I guess, since it would write any articles of impeachment, would be the Grand Central Station for whatever the rest of the House or the Southern District of New York, of the Justice Department, or the or Robert Mueller put together. The all of those facts can be kind of put together at the Judiciary Committee bill to form articles of impeachment.
Right. And I think they can do what they, as people say, it's not really defined Congress. But that's
high crimes and misdemeanors is whatever
again,
the House says it is.
Right. It's a political decision, and there are political consequences for doing it. So that there are no political consequences, again, for Andrew McCabe deciding to launch a secret investigation to the president, and even the special counsel doesn't pay a price. I mean, our system is based on accountability and people having to weigh the pros and cons and pay a price for it. So
but
I think
why
I,
you,
I welcome.
But do you agree then? Kim seems to think that that Nadler's already decided he's going to.
Yeah, I think he decided this back in September.
So you agree with that?
Yeah. I mean, look, Nancy Pelosi was saying, we have an agenda. It's not, we're not just going to spend our time going after Trump. And then now we get 80 subpoenas, that was clear from the beginning what they were going to do. Now, some of the other Democrats might not like that, the ones from more moderate places. But again, this is part of accountability.
Well, so. Officially, they're still saying, look, if we, we've got to assemble the facts here to make our case. What if the case turns out not to be as persuasive to the American public as registered in polling and in other public forums as they believe it to be? They could always, I guess, decide not to do it.
They could, but it just seems almost impossible to believe that that is what happens. I mean, the pressure that is being brought. First of all, remember, they hate Donald Trump. Okay, I think they made the decision to impeach him, in November of 2016, if they ever got control of the House. This is, and I think that Mr. Nadler gets some credit for actually saying, look, our problem is we've got to convince people that we're not trying to steal the last election. But that's the million-dollar question. Can you convince people of that, given the immense amount of hatred for the president, the resistance, the folks that are putting pressure on them to go this way? I'm not quite sure that – how do you convince Trump voters that this is not, as the president has said, a witch hunt when you're, bombarding with 80 subpoenas of different people and recovering ground that we've just done for the last couple of years. So they'll have to make that calculation in the end. And I think it could come back and bite them. But I just don't see how once this machinery is moving, it stops. Because, again, the pressure out there among their grassroots, this for many Democratic voters is going to be their litmus test on whether or not Democrats have perform the way they want them to. And I think that Democrats fear that if they don't go down this path, that they will be hurt themselves by progressive base voters in the next election.
Just to put a political fine point on that, Bill, Tom Steyer, the California billionaire, is running ads and even holding town halls in the meetings of prominent Democratic members. He did it in Richard Neal's Springfield, Massachusetts seat. Neal is the head of Ways and Means, saying, get those Trump tax records. Did it in Elijah Cummins' South right. Carolina district. He's a member of the House leadership. They're going around to these seats, basically fanning the flames of pro-impeachment sentiment and saying, you must move towards impeachment. And the point that if this impeachment machinery starts moving and starts humming, it's very hard to shut off. And it'd be very hard for a Democratic voter or Democratic member who is getting that kind of pressure to say, oh, no, sorry, I'm going to vote against impeachment and court a primary run.
Yeah, look, I think there's going to be a lot of tough decisions there. Look, the other thing is Republicans still have the Senate. It's hard for me to see, even if you voted for impeachment, a Senate that would convict Trump, depending on what they find.
Right.
We don't know what they find. I will say that the one thing they have going for them is I don't think Mr. Mueller is going to find any evidence of collusion or this, but there are probably a lot of murky things that are in there. Or people had different contacts, kind of like Paul Manafort had a lot of very questionable activities, not related to collusion, but they were there. So you can sort of build a case. I think the Democrats are aiming for impeachment if they could. They're still litigating the 2016 election. They're aiming for impeachment. But if they don't get impeachment, if you just have this out there, I think they're hoping that he's wounded for the next election. A president, that's under the impeachment threat, that's a lot of pressure. I remember, when I was in the Bush administration and just the special counsel investigations, that was a big cloud hanging over the White House.
Well, and the subpoenas that Nadler's sending out seem to be aimed in particular at an argument that Trump committed obstruction of justice by interfering in an investigation of his ties to Russia and investigation of Michael Flynn and other things. But if there is no underlying collusion evidence, Kim, and that is reported. I think a lot of Republicans and Trump supporters, and even some independent voters who have been listening to this talk about collusion for 2 years, might say, "Well, okay, well, boy, that was oversold. They don't have the goods." So then, wait a minute, they're moving on to obstruction, huh? And I think that the Democrats may be underestimating the degree to which the evaporation of the Russia collusion case, if it happens, and I'm not saying it will because I don't know what Mueller has, but if that happens, then their case on impeaching on other grounds, whether it be the Stormy Daniels payoffs, the woman to keep silent about Trump's alleged affairs, or obstruction for firing Comey, those are going to be harder cases to make.
Which is why you see them going down so many avenues, because I think what they're trying to do here and why they're not immediately moving for impeachment is because what they're ultimately going to come up with in terms of articles of impeachment are this kitchen sink indictment of Trump, as it were, just, and I don't mean that in a legal sense, but their criticism of him will range across all of these different buckets of areas. So, you know, you'll have obstruction of justice. That's what Nadler is pursuing. You have Adam Schiff, who now runs the House Intelligence Committee. He was on TV this weekend. He said, in fact, there is abundant evidence of collusion. He didn't really spell out what that is. Apparently, it had to do with the fact that Trump Jr. at one point sat in a meeting with a Russian. I'm not quite sure that is going to be very persuasive to people, but he's going to continue going back over the old ground that the House Intelligence Committee did to try to come up with his own evidence of collusion. You have the Oversight Committee now looking into Trump's finances, and they'll go from his tax returns to the Stormy Daniels question to the investment he was looking to make in Russia for a new Trump Tower in Moscow. And they'll combine all this to try to present an overwhelming picture of malfeasance and corruption. But again, I think what they are battling against, and you just precisely said, is for a lot of people that may just feel like harassment, overkill. For 2 years, we were told that the issue was collusion with Russia. If the special counsel doesn't find any, why are Democrats in fact looking to obstruct and impede a legitimately elected president?
And I think the evidence of the 90s bill is that you can impeach a president on partisan grounds, but you can't convict him, and the political fallout from that is uncertain at best.
Yeah, I mean, there's a reason the founders made it very difficult. Presidents have been impeached, but seldom convicted, right?
Three. Nixon was on the verge of impeachment.
Right, right. Yeah. And there's a reason for that. They don't want them to use it willy-nilly. So the House, because it's Democratic, they can do what they want in this. But I'm not even sure that the full Democratic House would go for impeachment. I think some of these guys, Conor Lamb, moderate seats, they're quiet. But depending on what they feel in their districts, they may feel pressure. You know, when it comes to a vote like this, you don't know where people are going to land.
That will be an excruciating choice, right, if the evidence isn't clear. All right. Thank you, Kim. Thank you, Bill. Thank you all for listening. We'll be back tomorrow with another edition of Potomac Watch.